already know, come on. You know what time it is.
Hey, yo, I represent Queens,
please let them know.
What's going on, everybody? It's another episode of the MI83 podcast. We are days away from Christmas. I'm just about done with all my Christmas shopping. I got a couple things here and there, but definitely wanted to talk hoops, talk a little bit New York Knicks basketball and general NBA things before Christmas. And we got an MI83 friend, Charlie Widows, who is the digital content manager for the New York Knickerbockers, the 14-14 New York Knicks. Is that what it is? Are we 14? Are we 500?
14-15 now after last night, but
right,
14-15.
After last night. Thanks for joining us again, man. I have to start off by saying that you were right. Kristaps Porzingis is a god, the sixth god. That's what I call him. Everybody has different nicknames for him, but the boy could ball, man. It's to the point now where I'm nervous every time he like jumps up because I don't want him to like break his knee and then turn into Greg Oden.
I think we spoke right before the season had started about him, right?
Yeah, right before, like maybe a game in, or maybe right before.
Right. Yeah, and I felt pretty good about saying he was really good. But I know the feeling you're talking about because I grew up a Clippers fan, and when they landed Blake Griffin, I was like, first of all, obviously he got hurt right away. But then every time after that he went up or something, I felt like he was going to get hurt too. It's natural when you got a special player like that.
No, I mean, he's on that level. I mean, I think Knicks fans, we're so desperate for anything, like – the tip dunks. For me, it's his defense. I mean, look, I mean,
right.
I think anytime you see a tall, lanky European player, ever since Dirk came to the league, we all expect Dirk-like skills, even though I think he's more of like a Dirk, Pau Gasol hybrid. But I think for me, I've just been more impressed with his defense, you know, the block shots and how good he is on his feet. His footwork for a 20-year-old 7'3 dude, his footwork is pretty good, and it's only going to get better, I'm hoping. Hopefully they'll get more coaches that can like really just be tailored to him. But did you see this in the preseason? Were you like, yo, this guy is going to be – I mean, you did, but did you think it was going to get to this level?
I spent – all of summer league with him in Vegas, and what I noticed was kind of what you're saying. Like, he put up like 3-for-9 shooting line, but he'd have like 6 rebounds, 2 blocks, a couple of assists, and like you can just tell that like he knows how to play the game. Whereas some of these guys, especially young guys, like they can't make an impact in other areas. So if they're not scoring, they're basically useless because rookies generally take a while to adjust. And he just knows his play. Early in the season when back dunks that everyone was freaking out about, one of the beat writers asked him a question, and he's like, well, it seems like you're playing pretty aggressively, and Kristaps kind of looked at him, and he's like, yeah, dude, like, that's how you play. Like, none of this is new to him. Like, he knows how to play basketball. He's, you know, from where I sat, I was like, okay, this is a guy who never watched him play in Europe. He's a big, tall, white guy, and kind of assumes he's going to play a certain way.
Right.
But Kristaps isn't like that. Like, Kristaps grew up, you know, reading World Star Hip Hop, and like he's an NBA basketball guy, and he's been groomed to be in this position. So obviously it helps that he's 7'3" and his skill development's great. Like, he had two brothers who played professionally in Europe that taught him the game and taught him how to be, but it's also, as you said, he works, and he's a step ahead of all the reporters' questions. So they're asking about something, like, he's like, yeah, I know that's an issue right now, but I'm working on it. Makes the adjustment. It's pretty crazy. I mean, he's, as you said, like, Knicks fans are desperate to the point where there are probably 5 to 10 other rookies that they could have gotten at pick number 4, and it would have been, like, good. You know, Emmanuel Mudiay would be a nice long-term project, or Justice Winslow or whatever, but this is on another level.
This is on another goddamn level.
Yeah.
Soon they're going to be those small Nick documentaries. Last year they had one on Walt Clyde Frazier. The year before they had on Iman Shumpert, but soon they're gonna have one on Kristaps, and we're gonna learn about his brothers. I did not know his brothers played ball. That's new news to me.
I'd love to go to Latvia this summer and help him work on it. If I get that paid for.
Oh, my God. Let me ask you this, though. In, like, 2 years, what do you think his natural position is going to be on this team?
It's a good question, and I think it's something they're realizing now. Like, the other night, Fisher was basically, like, when we were constructing the roster in the summer, we didn't realize he was going to be ready to play center now.
Yeah.
Like, they had to have other bodies that could absorb the pounding. And I still think they're going to be, like, seven-footers are not going to just stop being produced in this world, so there are going to be guys who are built in a way that you're going to want, like a Robin Lopez. You know, Robin, I think, signed a four-year contract. Like, he's going to be useful for that 4 years. Like, for the money, I'm not sure, but, like, there are going to be matchups where he's going to be able to help in that sense. But I do think Kristaps is going to be a five. I mean, what he is, 7 feet tall. There's no rule that a five can't shoot threes, and that's he's unstoppable at that position.
Step back threes, which is crazy. Who's he close with on the team? Like, who's his boys? Like, who's on, you know, who's he with on the bus, on the plane ride? Like, who's his go-to guy?
The thing about this team is that they're all really close. Like, I know every team comes out of training camp talking about the chemistry, but we talked about it then. Like, they legit all love hanging out together. And I think that's one of the things that Melo's really loved about this team is that, like, in the past people kind of, like, looked to him to be a leader, and at this point he just kind of, like, plays his role. It's very similar to the 54 win team, where just show up, everyone works hard, like, no, there's no one dude needed to set the tone,
right?
But I do, you know, Kristaps has talked about Sasha as a real mentor. He and Jaren Grant are pretty tight because they were drafted together and spent a lot of time together. And they're both, like, similar. They're obviously completely different players. You know, one's, like, 2 feet taller than the other. but they're very similar in that they're just, like, super focused. Basketball is their life. And not in, like, an unhealthy way, but, like, they understand that this is only the beginning. Even any moderate success they have now is not what they're trying to achieve.
Well, that's good to know that there is that team unity. I mean, you know.
Yeah, I mean, and listen, to your point, like, the veterans look up to Chris. Like, he's a veteran. It's crazy. But there's such a tight bond, and it's hard to do that. Like, there are plenty of guys who are cool off the court, but, like, he has a full package where they know they can count on him on the court, and he's mature off of it, which is really unique.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the other things that I really like about him is that he's handling New York really well. I mean, you've had players who've been here for, like, two to 5 year stints, and they just can't handle it. I mean, J.R. Smith handled it in his own way, but you know what I'm talking about, like, getting caught in the media, getting caught in the limelight, getting into issues like that. But, like, he just deals with it really well. Let me ask you this. Go ahead.
Uh-huh. During the draft process, when no one had seen him, and, like, I watched as much basketball as, you know, most people in the league, and I didn't really watch much of him in Spain last year. Like, they weren't in the first division. They just weren't on that often. So when I would hear people talk about how mature he was, how media savvy he was, like, all of that was nice, but if he didn't have the type of game he has, and it just doesn't matter. Like, if you're picking the top five, that stuff is secondary.
Right.
But now, when you see the game, and you couple all that other stuff on top of it, that's when you realize, oh my God, this is a special superstar, because it's just going to get better. You know, we've seen Michael Beasley come out. That dude had all the tools, all the physical talent, but he has nothing that Kristaps has in terms of focus and maturity.
None.
And when you factor in this dude, English is his third language, and so that's one thing. Plus, NBA media language is almost a separate thing entirely. I mean, the way that some of these reporters phrase questions confuses even English speakers, native English speakers. And the way he takes a question is so calm. First of all, he speaks very well, better than plenty of other guys in the locker room. But if he doesn't understand the saying, he'll just say, sorry, I don't understand what that means, and you explain it. And what that does is it prevents him from getting tripped up in miscommunication, which I feel like in the past. Sorry, we got a New York City.
No, it's all right, man. Don't worry about it.
I feel like that's a common pitfall with foreign players, is that they'll misunderstand a question or something, or they'll be unclear and kind of mutter something, and the reporter can take it the wrong way, and then all of a sudden you've got a situation on your hands. Where he's not going to get into that because he, A, understands basic media player principles, and B, he's confident enough in himself where he can say, sorry, I don't understand that viewpoint.
Yeah, i.e. all Latin American baseball players should take a page out of Kristaps Porzingis.
Yeah, because the media usually, they have one goal. It's like, get your story done, get a juicy quote, and get out of there. They're not going out of their way to try to get to know the players. And so, and I've covered minor league baseball, like, you have to, if you're an organization, you have to go out of your way to help assimilate some of these dudes, because they're just not used to it. And a lot of times they hang out together in the clubhouse, like, they're not really
trying to speak English, yeah,
their English and all that stuff. Yeah, so it's nice to not have to worry about that stuff as you're dealing with everything else that a rookie deals with the NBA.
True that. The 2 games ago, he went head to head with Karl Anthony Towns, which is pretty much what's come down to kind of the early race for Rookie of the Year. Did you see him maybe get prepared in a different way? Was he more focused than usual? I saw the embrace at the end, and Karl Anthony Towns seems like a nice dude so far in the sound bites that I've seen him in. So it's like two young dudes, hopefully, who will continue to get better, and there'll be more matchups in the NBA between them. But did you see him get prepared a little bit more, or was it kind of just like another game?
Well, I mean, there was definitely that special vibe in the arena. I think, I didn't hear Towns say it, but supposedly he made some comment about how he hoped they could beat Duncan and Garnett and like battle for the next 20 years. And I think he said it before the game, so that kind of whole storyline was going around. A couple things. One, I don't think he prepared any differently, because to him, like, you know, the game before that, I don't remember who they played, but I'm sure it was some other awesome veteran big man, and, like, the game after that was Joakim Noah and Thomas. You know, it's like, to him, even last night, like, when I've been thinking about how great Kristaps Porzingis is, I don't think, like, how does he compare to Nick Vucevic, who isn't ever going to be a superstar, but he's a really good player, and Kristaps had to battle him last night. You know, right, and so, like, it doesn't end for him, and especially because teams are now starting to, like, press up on him on the perimeter now. He doesn't have any space. They're making an effort to box him out so he doesn't tip dunk on them. So the matchup with Towns was incredible and really fun, but not because they're, like, the two superstars of the league, the young superstars. It was in the same way, like, when Kristaps went up against Anthony Davis, like, a month ago. I don't know if you remember that one. And Davis was incredible. But it's this feeling that, like, this is the beginning of some, like, we're seeing two people in the same league. It's, you're watching greatness.
Yeah.
As crazy as that sounds like, it's why the people, even though Kobe Bryant hasn't been good for 4 years, it's why people still freak out seeing him, because he's there, you know, he's been great. And that's where you can tell, like, even Andrew Wiggins, who I think is a good player, I'm not sure he's ever going to be a super duper star like some people think. He made some great moves, and, like, people oohed and aahed, but it wasn't the same sort of thing as Towns and Kristaps.
Yeah, Andrew Wiggins is on my fantasy team.
To your point,
and he's been a big, no, Wiggins has been a, at least fantasy-wise, Wiggins is on my fantasy team, and he's been a huge disappointment. But go ahead.
Well, he's one of those guys whose game, like, he's a really good defender, but he doesn't pass, and he's not a great dribbler, and he's not a rebound. So it's one of those where, like, he better score his 20, otherwise he's not really giving you that much value.
Yeah, people keep saying, is he the next Melo? Which I want to jump to Melo real quick. Melo's had an interesting year so far. I mean, you know, I've been pleased, kind of, even though I feel like he's lost a step. But I also do think that knee surgeries, it takes a bit to recover. I think he's moving the ball a lot. I think the way this Knicks team is set up is how old Laker teams and Bulls teams were set up. I mean, I'm not trying to compare this Knicks team to the Lakers and the Bulls, where pretty much you get your teammates involved for the first three quarters, and in the fourth quarter, the superstar, the wing guard player takes over. And I think Melo's 100%, but I don't know if he's fully healthy yet, meaning I just kind of contradicted myself. But I just think it's going to take a little bit longer for him to be where we're used to seeing him, you know, kind of the spring in his step. I think his first step is not as fast as it used to be. Maybe, you know, he's getting older, he's 30, but, I mean, what's your take on Melo on the season he's had so far? I mean, it looks like he's having fun. I mean, I haven't seen much like sulking we've seen in the past, because it does suck to lose, you know. But this is a competitive team, but are Melo's spirits good? I mean, I don't know if you can answer accurately on it, but, like, what do you see
with Melo? Yeah, no, I think you're right that it probably takes some time to recover to get fully back. But I also think, and this could be perhaps controversial, but I almost think this type of thing can be good for him long term because, you know, necessity is the mother of invention. Like, you have to adapt. And even without a knee injury, Carmelo Anthony's 31 years old. And maybe trying to score the way he did and try to dominate the way he did is not the way that you're going to do that the rest of your career.
It's possible.
Not to mention that this offense isn't built on isolation and penetration. It's built on ball movement and using the pass to get to the basket. And frankly, shooting. And Melo's a really good spot-up shooter. And so and not to mention, he still draws attention, so he's embracing the pass. Which is all to say, I think his spirits are really high. I think he's relishing not being the only go-to guy, both on the court and off. I think the fact that he respects it's almost the perfect situation because he respects Porzingis' game, and Porzingis on the court clearly makes it easier for Melo because A, the defense has to pay attention to him, and B, he is a good passer, and so he's willing to defer to Melo. And the other thing is, Kristaps has so much respect for Melo that there's no sort of ego issue there. Like, KP goes out of his way all the time to praise Melo as the great player he is, talk about what a mentor he is. And so there's that. And the other thing is, I think it's only natural for Melo to be in good spirits when you watch someone like Lance Thomas go from energy guy who barely can make an impact on the court to, like, legitimate helper on your team.
Yeah.
So what it does is it makes you buy into kind of the whole system. Like, wait, so they acquired Lance a year ago, and all of a sudden he's now a three-point shooter where you can give the ball up to him and have confidence that he's going to make it. That feels good. And it's reminiscent, again, of when they were good with the Jason Kidd team, where Melo just had to do his thing, and he was kind of happy about that. And I think that's kind of the way it is now.
No, I mean, definitely there are a lot of nice surprises on this team where Melo or anyone else could feel comfortable with them taking shots.
Yeah, I mean, it's really kind of cool to watch it. It's a good comparison you make to the Lakers because those were basically two superstars and a bunch of unknowns who, like, fit perfectly.
Yeah.
And I look around the team, I'm like, okay, Langston Galloway undrafted, Lance Thomas, I think undrafted, or maybe second round, but, like, bounce around the league, waiver guy. You know, Jose is just a solid guy that everyone seems to love on the team, and he's shooting well again, so that's nice. But yeah, even Robin. Robin's kind of a garbage man, and
I like Robin
all
Lopez a
lying
lot.
In.
He's a typical Nick player, kind of. Well, mid-90s Nick type player, tough, kind of just energy guy. With that being said, though, I mean, you know, everybody who listens to ESPN, guilty. Trades are finally being talked about, and Melo is a name that's being kind of floated around, him possibly going to Miami. I mean, do you hear that, or is it just kind of just the media doing what they do?
Oh, yeah, I mean, no, I am on Twitter all day long, right. And I see the responses we get. You know, I was trying to think of who the Knicks team would be if the Twitter GMs out there got to make the decisions. I know Brandon Jennings would be the point guard.
Yeah.
And I think David Lee would be back. Maybe everyone wants us to sign David Lee now. I see it. I just, it's so easy to sit back there and kind of make these decisions that a player could be traded somewhere without knowing all the logistics. I mean, first, Melo has a no-trade clause, so he'd have to want to go somewhere else.
Right.
He makes a decent salary, which for most teams you have to match within a certain percentage there.
Was it 24 or 29 million? How much does he make?
I don't know the details, and I probably shouldn't be worrying about those specifics anyway.
Right.
I don't know. I mean, it's a big number.
And
a lot of almost every team is up to a certain number with the cap where they have to match.
Right. He makes 22, almost 23 million. He makes almost 23 million this year, but that's neither here nor there.
Right. And the other thing thing is, I think, and we talked about this the first time we talked before the season, is that, like, this idea of timetable and the Knicks versus, you know, Porzingis coming in and Melo kind of being on the second half of his career, like, I don't know if I really buy that. Like, Melo still has the rest of his contract, whatever, the 3 or 4 years left on a contract. He can still be a really helpful player on a good team. There's no incentive for the Knicks to, like, rush out and do anything like that. Not to mention, they don't have their own draft pick this year, so any sort of, like, draft consideration.
Right, I mean, that's all we'd want, I think.
Yeah, and they're in the playoff race. So I don't know why there's any... If you're basically... There's not a deal out there where you trade Melo and you get better this year. And I think that, unless there's, like, some crazy proposal that sets you up with seven, you know, picks down the road, like Boston got for the KG Pierce deal or whatever.
Highway robbery.
It doesn't seem to make sense. Yeah. Well, yeah, highway robbery, but I will never forget driving back from the Knicks training center that night. It was draft night, and the Knicks had just drafted Tim Hardaway, and the Celtics had just pulled, or the Nets had just pulled off that trade, and everyone on the radio was crushing the Knicks for not doing enough to get better, and praising Brooklyn for doing that.
Yeah. Brooklyn's a mess right now.
It's crazy how things change. Think about where we were last year looking at the Knicks.
Oh, God.
And where we are now.
Yeah, I think last year at this point we were like, all right, number one draft pick, and that's the thing.
Not
that's
to mention,
the thing.
Number one draft pick, but everyone was also saying there was a guaranteed number one pick. We had looked before.
Right. Right, and he's doing 200 miles over the Ben Franklin Bridge and getting into fights. But, you know, he is 19.
That's not the guy.
No. Most likely Melo will not be traded. No trade clause. And also, I think Melo is really likes this team. And I really like watching these guys play. And it could be because last year we were so bad that anything is an improvement. But this year, I really like the ball movement. Clearly, I love Kristaps Porzingis. But I do think that this Knicks team needs something. I think we need another guard. Aaron Aflalo is a nice player, but you could tell the difference for when he has a good game and when he doesn't have a good game. So basically, to me,
who was that?
Aaron Aflalo.
Oh, right, yeah.
This team is a completely different team when he plays well. So that proves to me that we need a guard that can put up, you know, basically be a second scorer for this team. I don't know if that's what they're going to do, but if you could, what would you add to this team to make them reach the next level? Do you agree they need another guard, or would you see something else that I'm missing?
It's a good question. I think, first of all, at his best this year, Aaron Aflalo has been incredible, which is, like, not something that anyone can expect to be sustained. There have been games where he'll shoot 80%, make threes, you know, like, so he's bound to have some sort of regression. That's just natural. I think that the wings are thinnest, although, listen, if Lance Thomas is a real NBA difference maker who can shoot 40% from three and play defense, that's right there something. I've looked at all the, like, you know, possible trade candidates and guys out there, and there aren't great options, especially with what the Knicks would have to give up. And I think about, like, a guy like Jaren Grant, who basically is hard to... It's hard to play him consistently if you're trying to make the playoffs because he's a rookie.
Can't shoot, not yet.
He's an 18th pick, and you don't expect those guys to help right away. So the question is, like, do you go all in for this year? Which I don't even know how that would look, an all in type of trade. But or do you kind of hedge? Do you keep building and see how you're going while still giving those guys a chance to grow? I mean, like, Kristaps Porzingis is great, and he's going to be a superstar. He is. Basically, almost already a superstar. But he still has a lot to learn and a lot to pick up just in game time. So, you know, there will be nights when, like, Nick Vucevic is way better than him, but him getting the minutes against Vucevic is very valuable.
Definitely. And
I really can't think of just, you know, a lot of these. If you hear guys' names available, it's probably for a reason, because they're not good or they have a bad contract or, you know, it's like, guys, it's hard, especially when you don't have picks to deal. And a lot of the guys you like on your roster aren't trade chips. They're future pieces for you.
Right. Well, with that being said, let's just kind of jump overall to the to the association in general. Still on the trades. I mean, it's still early, but which team do you think? It's a 2-part question. Which team do you think needs to make a big move, and which team do you see making a significant move?
The one I do see making a big move is always a question. Like, I feel like the biggest moves always come out of nowhere.
Right.
I think Chicago has pieces, but they don't fit, and I'd like to see something happen there. I don't know, it's tough because I don't think Derrick Rose is the guy.
Not anymore.
He's making a lot of money. and they have 4 bigs, like, none of whom play well together, and many of which are kind of one-dimensional.
Yeah.
It's almost like offense, defense subs and stuff, which is kind of weird there.
I love Joakim Noah,
Chicago
though.
Chicago is a team. Huh?
I love Joakim Noah, though. I think any team he goes to is...
I do, too. Problem is, you're kind of buying low, or they'd be selling low, which is not necessarily the smartest.
Right.
I do, too. He'd be like a perfect third big for a lot of teams, especially ones that value bigs that can pass. Who's going to make moves? I think there are teams, for example, teams like the Timberwolves or the Knicks, which are like kind of in the second stage of building, would have options to add certain pieces for the stretch to make a playoff push, but it might not be worth it. Orlando. Watching Orlando last night, I thought they have way too many players on their team. They need to consolidate and try to build around their young guy. I mean, they have, in my opinion, Elfrid, Mario Hezonja, and Aaron Gordon are going to be all really, really, really good. And they're 21 or 20 years old, all 3 of them. So why they're paying Tobias Harris for 4 years and why they're, I don't know if Oladipo is the guy there. I feel like they could really, if they wanted to, if a certain superstar came available, they could really make that work. I don't know if DeMarcus Cousins is the guy, but...
Another player I love.
Available, a package of Vucevic, Tobias, and Oladipo, that's a pretty strong trade pack.
Yeah, I think teams like Sacramento, you always hear Boogie Cousins' names in trade rumors. I don't think they ever get rid of that guy unless it becomes unbearable.
Well, I think at times it's definitely been unbearable there.
I think at times, but if you're the owner, you're like, do I really trade this guy? I mean, this guy gets 20 and 10 making eggs in the morning.
Trying to get inside their thinking is really not smart. I have no idea. The other one is New Orleans. They need to get the, I guess last year it became public that the owner kind of made a playoff or bust declaration. I think they're going to have to make moves if they want to try to get back again this year. Utah, with Gobert out to go along with Exum, I think they're really well coached, and I think they have enough depth to maybe weather the storm, but I could see them trying to add a point guard just to be steady for the rest of the year. I don't know if Denver, I assume they've always had a thing for Danilo Gallinari, which would be pretty cool to get him there.
To Utah?
Because the thing is, Derek Favors is so good and so versatile that you can build a small lineup with him at the 5, or when Gobert comes back, you can go huge and play him at the 4.
Mm-hmm.
And they need some more help creating offense because Gordon Hayward is going to fall down on the floor from having to do so much for that team. But again, there were those teams where their time frame for contention is probably maybe next year or even the year after because of the way Dante's injury pushed the timetable back. But you don't know how eager they're going to be to jeopardize the future for that. But again, it's like we always look at who are the players coming up on free agency that might be available or who are the young guys that are going to get paid. And there don't seem to be any obvious trade candidates at this point that I would want.
Let me ask you. So there are 3 teams that I've been watching that to me have been kind of a disappointment. Well, 2 of them definitely a disappointment, and the 3rd one you just know they're going to do something. So I'll start with the 2 disappointments. The Los Angeles Clippers. What do you see going on there, and do you think they're going to make a move? Do you think they have too many disgruntled wing players?
I don't think, first of all, they don't have anything to deal. So if they make a move, they're going to have to luck out that some team has to get rid of a contract or something and they can absorb it. But they don't have anything. They have no assets. They have no pick. And they have no capital. So I don't, you know, and they have three great players and a bunch of, well, I guess four if you count JJ, because he's pretty crucial to what they do.
Very important to what they do.
But but here's the thing, is like, they're in that stratosphere at this point where I can't even view them as a disappointment. Like, nothing, this doesn't matter. What matters is the playoff. And what they have to do is, A, figure out who their starting ball forward is, and then, B, what their big rotation is, or how they're going to handle their rotation off the bench in a series. Like, they don't have a third big. Paul Aldridge last night played a decent amount and looked good. Like, he did what he does, which I think can help them, that type of skill set. But at this point, Doc's kind of just, like, tinkering. Like, is it Wes Johnson? Is it Lance Stephenson at the three? Maybe there's a veteran buyout in the after the trade deadline, or there's a small trade here or there. But I just don't see. I don't think Jamal Crawford has much value around the league, and I don't think they can move him for real help. They're not playing. They're not as good as the Warriors or the Spurs right now. But I don't think they're. You know, those they can't beat out of those teams either. They almost beat Oklahoma last night, who's also really good.
Yeah, they are really good, and we haven't even talked about the Clippers.
And it happens. But it happens with a lot. Like, Dwight Howard is a perfect example. Oftentimes, what we decide about a team or a player's personality influences what we think about them as a team or a player. Like, Dwight Howard's still a 20-10 future Hall of Fame defensive player of the year type dude when he's healthy. The Clippers are still a contender when they're right. Just because they're annoying and they flop and they complain to the refs and stuff, they're still really, really good.
No,
that's my Clippers take. And I grew up a Clippers fan, and I used to cover them, and I they're not quite as fun to watch anymore, but I'm still giving them a decent chance, especially if they have home court advantage in the playoffs.
Well, at this point, who knows? But, And
like, they're not Houston, for example. Houston, to me, is a team that really is not focused on the big picture, where I think the Clippers really are.
Yeah, I don't know what happened to Houston. I really don't know what happened to Houston. It sucks that they fired Kevin McHale. I thought that was a perfect fit for his style of play, those players. But I would love to be a fly in that locker room.
Yeah, totally.
Oh, my God. Totally. But jumping to another team, and a team that I wish Paul Pierce was still on, the Washington Wizards. What happened to those dudes? Like, I really thought they were going to be kind of like, you know, I thought it was going to be Cleveland, Miami, Washington. I really thought that they made a huge leap, and I guess Paul Pierce was really that important to that team.
I also think they were in a really bad Eastern Conference last year. I've never been a Washington guy. I don't like anything on their team aside from John Wall. I don't know what you're expecting out of that team. Like,
a jump.
Marchand, Gortat, and Nene gonna do, what's that?
A jump, a sort of a jump. I thought last year really would have motivated them, you know. Yeah, Marcin and Nene are not kind of what you drool over, but John Wall, I mean, Bradley Beal can't stay on the court, but
I love John Wall, but, like, Bradley Beal can't stay on the court. That's no longer is that an asterisk. That is the reality. Like, he's not helping them win enough. And, you're talking about expectations that are, like, Eastern Conference Finals and stuff, and I don't see them as anywhere near that. My second favorite player on that team behind John Wall is Kelly Oubre, but I don't see how that team, where they are in their timetable, I don't think they can afford to let a rookie develop if he's not. And I guess he's been playing much better recently, or actually playing, and I'm optimistic that he can help them down the road. But it's tough because Randy Whitman is probably coaching to win now. I don't know if he's so secure if they don't win. And then what else? They don't shoot. Jared Dudley at four, like, that's a fine, I've seen, you know, that's a fine offensive kind of backup plan, but I don't know if that's going to sustain you and make you a conference finals contender.
Probably not. That's definitely not going to do it. One team I thought that would be going to the conference finals, and I still think they will. The Miami Heat. I mean, again, it's again a lot of like that trade rumor stuff about them dealing Whiteside and Winslow, trying to get Mello, right, trying to get Howard. I really feel like these guys are going to make a move because Pat Riley's an evil genius. And
yeah,
I mean, do you see them shaking things up? Like, normally, I feel like a normal person or someone who doesn't know, who knows very little about basketball, like me, would not trade Justice Winslow or Hassan Whiteside. But then I know there's right, the whole kind of the ins and outs of Hassan Whiteside's contract.
Well, but yeah, I mean, those two are uh-huh, polar opposites in terms of asset. You know, the reason to trade Whiteside is, A, he can probably get you something decent, but B, they don't have his bird rights, so they can't re-sign him. They're restricted in what they can give him next year. So that would be the incentive to move him. Otherwise, he's helping them win right now. The thing about Justice is, I think you and I are probably similarly high on him. He could be really, 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 really good. I think he's really good. The reason why I think his name ever even popped up is I remember Zach Lowe writing or maybe on a podcast saying he's kind of their ticket to a true superstar. And so that's the only context in which I could see him even being discussed. I mean, I know they turned down a billion offers in the draft for teams to trade up to 10 because they wanted to dig Winslow. I know they were ecstatic that he fell to them. With Dwayne Wade entering his final years of his career, I just don't see how they move him unless he's the guy that gets them another cornerstone that's already there. And as Zach Lowe pointed out, like, Pat Riley is probably inclined to take the present over the future. I mean, he traded two first-round picks for Goran Dragic. He's not giving up on... He's not trading Justice Winslow just to get, you know, some sort of fill-in temporary stopgap. Like, if he's trading Justice Winslow, it's a guy that he thinks is going to be a star for them for a long time. But yeah, right, in the sense that this is their window. You know, they have an opportunity now. They've done a good job developing guys like Tyler Johnson and Whiteside who fill in around Bosch and Wade when he's healthy. It would probably have to come out of nowhere because I haven't heard anything about a star of that magnitude that's available that would warrant trading Justice Winslow.
Yeah, and some of the things I've heard from probably some of the same sources, I mean, the available sources, like, you know, the Low Post or anything like that, is Dwight Howard. But I wouldn't trade Justice for Dwight. I mean, Dwight still can get you 20 and 10 when he's engaged, but I think Justice is going to be a really, really good player. But let me ask
right,
you this.
And you got it. I mean, that contract is incredible. Having a rookie-scale deal right now with a guy that is going to help you for the next 5 years for basically the minimum is invaluable.
It is. It's like having a car and not having to pay monthly payments on it anymore, and the car still...
Right. Well, listen, it's literally allows you to give Dwayne Wade 20-whatever million dollars he got.
Yeah.
Because he's not worth nearly that, but Justice making so little allows you to shift those resources that way.
Dwayne Wade has his moments, as Jalen Rose calls him now, flashes.
When he's healthy, Dwayne Wade is still showing that he can be really, really good, but... A third of your salary cap number is a lot.
It is a lot for Dwayne Wade. The game, I randomly texted you maybe like a couple weeks ago when the Heat were playing the Thunder, and then tie game, Kevin Durant jacks up a three with like 5 seconds left, and then jacks up a contested three, misses it, and then Dwayne Wade comes back and draws the foul, and right there, to me, it shows why Dwayne Wade's so valuable. So let me ask you this. In talking to you and hearing you talk about the Heat, you don't think that they are the team to kind of compete against the Cavs from the East? I mean, clearly the Cavs are the favorite. They, you know, it's probably going to be a cakewalk like it was last year. I would love to see that Washington Wizards Cavs Eastern Conference Final, but Atlanta got out of it. But who do you see as the second team in the East, or is it just kind of like the Cavs and then, you know, the junior league.
The problem with Miami the problem with Miami is, or like any veteran, true veteran team like that, where they're relying on a bunch of guys over 30, is you never know. You feel good over the course of the season that if they're healthy, they're going to win X number of games and put themselves in position to, you know, get home court advantage and battle for the conference finals. But the question is, what happens when you get there? Have you expended too much energy over the course of the year? You know, what's Dwayne Wade at that point? 2 years ago when they were in the finals, Wade looked cooked.
He looked done.
And that was 2 years ago.
There are YouTube clips of him not playing defense, just walking.
It was weird. And I think Chris Bosh is like a game-changing star, two-way, you know, great player. But again, how much is he going to have to do over the course of the year to be the go-to guy on a great playoff team? I don't know. The question of who's the second-best team in the East is a hard one. It's really hard. I do think there's a lot of, like, more quality teams now. But I don't know. Assuming Cleveland gels, they're just so deep. And that's the point, is that they can afford to rest LeBron for games. They can afford to have, you know, play Kevin Love last minute, because that means Tristan gets his time. So that's why. And same thing with Golden State, is that they're blowing out teams so bad that those guys can rest for fourth quarters.
They can rest for the fourth quarter.
And San Antonio, you know, these are the class of the league, the teams that can not only be really good, but be really good at rest guys.
Yeah, you know, the Spurs are, you know, they're like, that's just, when I get older and have kids, I'm going to talk to them about the Spurs.
Yeah.
Because they seriously,
to me, it's more impressive than Golden State. Watching them dominate is more impressive than Golden State.
Like, I'm careful to say that because Golden State, you know, they only have one loss to this point, but the Spurs keep reinventing themselves and dominating while they do it. And
well, that's what I mean. Like, it's just watching it, just from a watching it perspective. Like, Tim Duncan is 39 years old.
39.
You can tell that the bones. What is it?
He's 39. It's crazy. He's an 39. Alien.
He's 39 years old. And when he moves, you can tell that the bones are hitting in his knee. I mean, there's nothing there to insulate. And they don't move fast, and they don't do it, and yet they destroy teams. I watched them play Utah, who's really good and young and plays hard. They're like the fourth youngest team. They should be way more athletic, and they were just getting destroyed. So I can't remember who it was, but someone made a point about how San Antonio seems to have cracked the code defensively, where they know, they seem to know based on probability, like, where passes are going and where the other teams want to go, because it seems like they're not offering too much resistance, and then all of a sudden the other team's in a horrible spot and they can either take a bad shot or they turn it over or do something. You know, and obviously a lot of that's Kawhi, but they're really, really, really good.
No, they are really good, really impressive. And for me, the game, I mean, there have been a ton of games where you're like, the Spurs are amazing, but I think it was against Philly. And, like, look, we all know Philly sucks.
Right.
They're the worst team ever. But I think Duncan wasn't playing, Kawhi wasn't playing, and then it was Boban Maras.
Oh, yeah, I remember that game.
Yo, he went off. I'm like, who is this guy? He looks like my giant. He looks like George Mirasan Jr. And
Boban.
He went in there and he took it to him. He took it to him, and I was just like, this guy's like doesn't even play, but when he does play, he can do that.
I don't know. Do you remember a couple of years ago when it was one of the big three Heat years, maybe the first year or the second year, and the Spurs were like the best team in the West, and the Heat were the best team in the East, and they were about to play on TNT that night. And Popovich didn't even fly Tim, Tony, and Manu to the game.
Yeah.
And then the league, like, just, like, fined him or something.
But they lost that game by two. They went, took that game to overtime, didn't they?
Say, yeah, the best part is they were leading, like, with minutes to go in the fourth quarter. They're great.
They are great. I know you have to go soon. You're about to ball till you fall. But let me ask you this.
That's right.
The Christmas games, there are five games. I think there's only one good one. Why?
I was going to say, yeah, what a bummer of a schedule.
Oh, my God. Do you think they just thought that these teams were all going to be good, or is it just kind of like, you might not have the answer to this, but you might have a better hypothesis than I would? Like, there's one game.
No, I mean, I think they look at numbers, and they look at research, and see who likes to watch what teams, and yeah, listen, I'm not going to be able to watch games for most of the day on Christmas, and I'm still depressed, even though they're not the best games. Obviously, the one game is going to be awesome. But who is Oklahoma's playing someone interesting, right?
Miami, the Bulls. Or? They're playing the Bulls.
Or the Bulls, yeah.
The Bulls are a mess, man. Pete Butler's yelling at Hoiberg, D. Rose, just looks...
Yeah, I think that was overblown, by the way, the Butler. That was at the Garden.
That was
a weird, weird game because it shows you how much of the NBA happened kind of off the court and you don't really realize it. Like, that team coming off a 4-overtime loss the night before to play the Knicks was not that. I mean, everyone was talking before the game as if they were expecting to go a certain way. You know, I remember when I heard about the sleep doctor that Doc Rivers hired to work with Celtics.
Uh-huh.
And the story he tells is the sleep doctor could basically look at the Celtics schedule and circle certain games that he knew were going to be blowouts. And Doc's like, how do you know this? And he's like, it's just like human bodies with certain travel patterns or previous back-to-backs or whatever, they don't respond. Like, you know this. And so Powell didn't even make the trip. Rose had played 55 minutes the night before. Jimmy had played 55, I think, as well. And they're not particularly deep. And the Knicks had blown out Philly the night before and were... everyone had rested, basically, the fourth quarter. So, like, that game was basically predetermined. I would imagine what happened, and I wasn't in the Bulls locker room postgame. I would imagine what happened is, you know, Jimmy was embarrassed or frustrated because they got beat down, and that's what he said. It's probably taken out of context. Because he said afterwards, or one of them said afterwards, that they had a productive talk about that.
I hope so, man. That team, to me, that team is definitely going to do something interesting because they just, like you said before, they just don't fit. Nothing fits. D. Rose,
right.
Someone made an interesting suggestion that D. Rose should go to the D League for a little bit.
I saw that today. Good luck convincing him of that.
But it makes sense, though. You know, he made a great comparison. I forgot who it was. Someone on ESPN. But in baseball... when your shit isn't right, man, you go to the minor leagues.
But that's the difference. That's the big difference. Is baseball is set up so differently where that's not viewed as a demotion.
Yeah.
That's, you know, just how you do it.
Yeah. But Charlie, thanks a lot, man. I know you got to go ball. I really appreciate you coming on here. We're going to do it again soon. And, yeah, man, hope you have a great holiday.
Yeah, have a great holiday. We'll check in the new year.
All right, man. Peace.
Come on.
You know what time it is. Hey, yo, I represent Queens, please let them know. Hey, yo, I represent Queens, bitch.